This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. August of 2021, a catastrophe for Afghanistan and the people of Afghanistan, and a lesson not learned for the United States military. What is to be done? Very little today other than to review, and there's a new report, why the Afghan security forces collapsed. This from the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, called SIGAR. To help me understand this report, which is end-to-end failure, is Bill Raggio of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. He and his colleagues keep the Long War Journal. All that spring and summer of 2021, Bill and his colleagues each week chronicled the failures that were obvious from the reports from the region. And yet, Bill, a very good evening to you. The final collapse, those fraught days of August, the predicate for that was the decisions made long before the negotiation, even long before that, committing ground forces to Asia without an adequate timeline. However, let's focus just on August. Was there anything that could have been done to improve the exit? Because as of now, it is a record of catastrophe, cruelty, tragedy, and unknowns. Good evening to you, Bill.
Good evening, John. Yes, there was a third way. The two options that were laid out to the American people and were laid out by policymakers were: we stay in Afghanistan, we continue supporting the Afghan government as we have been for the last 20 years, or we leave. But there were never the third option, which I argued for and which literally nobody wanted to hear, was to find a way to leave Afghanistan in a manner that would allow the Afghans to control some territory, to prop up their security forces and maintain the fight against the Taliban. We talked about this on your show, John, multiple times, but I'll quickly summarize here. What needed to be done was the Afghan military and government needed to withdraw from some key areas that were going to fall to the Taliban after U.S. withdrawal. That was particularly in the south and in the east. Basically create a situation where you had Northern Alliance 2.0, Northern Alliance being the force of warlords that fought the Taliban prior to the U.S. invasion. The Afghan military had an air force that was effective, but the U.S. withdrawal, it withdrew the maintenance that once they couldn't be protected by U.S. military, they had to leave. They needed to be supplied. So if you would establish, if you cleared some areas in the north, establish some bases and provided support to the Afghan government, you could have had a situation where you wouldn't have this full control, Taliban control of Afghanistan. That was never an option. I always say the U.S. government, U.S. policymakers are often binary in their thinking. It's on or off. And that's what we saw with Afghanistan. No one ever explored the option of what if we partially support the Afghan government, give them a fighting chance. It may not have worked, but if we had at least had some visibility in Afghanistan and we would have given the Afghans a fighting chance. Full withdrawal, the full abandonment of the Afghan government was assured the collapse of the Afghan government.
So it is your measure now, more than a year and a half later, that there was sufficient firepower to provide security for the Afghan National Defense Forces, and that that could have been supplemented by U.S. or NATO air power for some time, perhaps indefinitely, because my memory of the Taliban is this was no ferocious fighting band of heroes. These were marauders. They were then and are now thieves, gangsters, bullies, and endlessly cruel. And intimidating an army like that is usually very easy because their morale is low. They need to only pick on the weak, not go up against something that's a hard target. And your measure is if we made Kabul a hard target, it would still be in the hands of the government today. Is that a fair summary?
I believe that's the case. Of course, we can't build a time machine and change things and find out the answer. But yes, and again, it would have required hard choices by the Afghan government and the Afghan military to abandon areas. The Afghan government was attempting to control everything, and in effect, it controlled nothing. So on the Taliban, I would agree and disagree with your assessment. By Western standards, by the U.S. military standards, certainly the Taliban was a marauding band of thugs. But by Afghanistan standards, it was an effective fighting force. It was, remember we talked about training bases for years, the camps where they were training. People laughed at these videos that the Taliban were putting out. And my argument was, this isn't a military that the Taliban is assembling to defeat the United States on the battlefield. It was a military that they were assembling to defeat the Afghan government, the Afghan military on the battlefield. So the Taliban was Afghan good enough to win in Afghanistan. One of the advantages the Afghan military had was air power and the intelligence that comes with that, the ability to strike deep at the Taliban in areas that are protected. And once we withdrew that support, that was an advantage that the Afghans had. And as soon as that was withdrawn, the Taliban, its Afghan good enough military, was able to overwhelm the Afghan military, which tried to defend everything, but in effect defended nothing in the end.
Bill, I remember week by week, we documented, and your map documented, the Taliban overrunning provinces, usually provincial centers, and there would be a video sent out from the Taliban. And suddenly we would see what appeared to be a very hard target, something of a fortress with U.S. vehicles parked on the side, with aerials for long-range communication, with huge concrete blocks to make it very difficult to drive a vehicle in, and no Afghan National Army, gone. No bodies on the ground, nothing particularly important to say that there was a battle here. What had happened, and you assured me week after week, the Afghan National Army just bugged out, just left, abandoned their equipment, ran away. Did that have to happen? What did they need for them not to run away from what looked to be very hard targets?
Yeah, and John, this is what, when I talked about the Afghan military being overextended, trying to defend everything and in effect defend nothing, the Taliban often surrounded these district centers. It was districts and not provinces. The provinces were only overrun at the very end, but the districts, which are like counties here in the United States, the Taliban would surround the district centers or surround key bases in these district centers and cut them off. And they would only be able to be resupplied by air in many cases. And once the Afghan military became overstretched, and again in the summer, this late spring and summer of 2021, when we withdrew the logistical support for the Afghan military, for its air forces, they couldn't, at that point in time, they couldn't defend those bases. They were running out of food. They were running out of ammunition. The Taliban, in some cases, they overran them because the Afghan security, they couldn't get medevac out. They couldn't get reinforcements in. In some cases, the Taliban would negotiate with the Afghan military and allow them to march off the bases sometimes without weapons. And in some cases, they overran them. So in some cases, the Afghan forces just flat out surrendered. It was because the Afghan military was overstretched. The Taliban military strength was constantly underestimated by the U.S. military, by NATO, and by the Afghan military. It was a far more effective, again, it wasn't going to stand toe-to-toe against the U.S. military on the battlefield, but it was certainly capable of doing so against the Afghan military.
Bagram, my memory is, 40 miles or 40 kilometers outside of Kabul?
And correct.
An armed camp, the envy of the world. Everything coming in and out of Bagram was secure. You don't need a Marine battalion. The Afghan National Army could have secured it with air power. Why? I don't find anywhere in this report why it was abandoned. What were they thinking, Bill? Even if there was going to be an evacuation from Bagram, it would have been orderly and secure.
John, as soon as this decision was made, and we talked about it again at the time on your show here, I was dumbfounded. If anyone who's been to Kabul, I've been there. The airport isn't like in my hometown of city of Philadelphia, where the airport's 5, 6, 8 miles outside of the city, sort of in a remote area. You got a long stretch to get in. And when you land in Kabul International Airport, you are literally about, I think it's about 1 or 2 miles from the heart of the city. So if you're going to conduct an evacuation from there, it was going to be a mess. Lieutenants and sergeants and privates that I spoke to when I asked their opinion about this were dumbfounded as well. You did not need to be a military genius to know that abandoning Bagram was going to be a disaster. And we all witnessed that. There is no explanation for this. The explanation is that the Biden administration wanted to leave 1,000 troops in Afghanistan to protect the embassy. And in order to do that, they had to keep the troops at the airbase at Kabul International. That's the reasoning. That is you're the big problem in this war, John, entirely. Everything has been numbers driven. How many troops do we have in Afghanistan? Is it 1,000? Is it 2,000? 5,000? 10,000? 100,000? We never put the right amount of troops in to achieve the mission. And that was the problem, right? Let's keep 1,000 troops in Afghanistan, not let's secure the embassy and ensure an adequate evacuation point and keep Bagram International Airport open. That was, that in a nutshell is the problems with the decision making in Afghanistan. There was never really, in my estimation, any strategic thinking, any sound policy that came out of only at certain points in time. But in general, it was just flawed, failed strategizing in Afghanistan.
Bill Rajo, Senior Fellow, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. He and his colleagues keep the Long War Journal, which is a chronicle of the failure in Afghanistan and other parts of the Middle East and Africa, continuing to document this maybe for the 22nd century, maybe lesson learned for another sovereign power. But right now, the Office of the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Research, February 28, 2023, a catastrophe. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.